our job.
But we're not mean in our town of Halloween.
In this town,
don't we love it now?
Everyone's waiting for the next surprise.
Skeleton Jack might catch you in the back and
scream like a banshee, make you jump out of your skin.
This is Halloween, everybody scream.
Won't you please make way for a very special guy?
Wildman Jack is king of the pumpkin patch. Everyone hail to the pumpkin king. Now this is Halloween, this is Halloween. Halloween, 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 Halloween.
In this town we call home, everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Shay Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO if you prefer letters to numbers. Call in. Be a part of the show. We love to hear from our listeners. Later on tonight, we're going to be talking about the Harvey Weinstein situation.
Because it's so much fun.
It is. It is. It's just the gift that keeps on giving.
It is indeed.
And everybody's happy and everybody's joyful in America because apparently
things just keep getting better and better.
Sexual harassment is over. It's done. Right?
Oh, yeah.
We're done with that now.
Definitely. According to my drive up to Medford this evening.
Please purge all of your bad memories. We don't want to hear them. No, I'm not. No. It's just where a new age of enlightenment has begun.
Theoretically.
Yes. How are you doing, Shay? Okay. Let's move on from that question.
Honestly, I think despite how either of our days went, how are you doing is such a loaded question these days.
Yeah.
Like, it used to just be a standard greeting, and now it's how are you doing?
Yeah. It's an act of compassion. It really is, that question.
Yeah, asking that, and it's also inviting. You shouldn't ask someone how they're doing unless you really actually want to know, because they're going to tell you.
Yeah, and we're both in rough shape.
Yeah.
You for a variety of reasons. Me, because I was out late last night watching Suspiria with Chris Earle.
Yeah, yours is a way more fun reason than mine.
Yeah, but I'm still feeling it today because I was also out late Monday watching football and talking to people.
Well, so look forward to the show, folks. I've had a terrible day human-wise.
Yeah, I'm barely
Derek's
functional.
Had a terrible day functional human-wise.
I may pass out before the end of the show, and it's dark out. Can I point out that it's dark out? When did this happen?
Yeah, it really...
Weren't we doing the show in daylight just a week ago or...
Right?
You know?
It used to be that I'd be pull the shades, please. Things are getting a little too real.
Yeah. Now it's dark out.
And now we can be dark.
Yes, now the long night begins. Although some might make the argument that it began back on January 1st. We will be doing our worst stuff again at the end of this year.
I like to think January 20th. Anywho.
No, it was before that. It was definitely before that. But let's get caught up on all of the bad things that are happening right now.
Yes. In local news, the neighbors to the south of my hometown, rocking it out. According to police, a 17-year-old boy has been arrested in connection with an alleged sexual assault in a Massachusetts high school. Weymouth police say the teen was arrested today and is currently being held in custody. The Weymouth School District acknowledged that the alleged attack had taken place on Monday inside of Weymouth High School, saying in a statement by the superintendent that, quote, as soon as we became aware of the incident, we immediately involved the Weymouth police and took appropriate action in accordance with our code of conduct. The statement also said the incident, quote, involves minor students, end quote. Further information has not yet been disclosed due to the ages of those involved.
You know, this is why we shouldn't be talking about Harvey Weinstein and these other things, because it just, you know, it puts bad ideas in the minds of our young people.
That's honestly, there's right? always a yin and a yang when things like this happen.
Am I right about this? That it's this sexualized,
I believe you are correct,
hyper-sexualized culture brought on by the ongoing news coverage.
Well, it's for every person that says, I have to change the way I am, there's another that says, I'm sorry, for every man that says, I should change the way I am, there's another that says, ooh, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay. Well, in national news, President Trump denied that he told the widow of a fallen soldier during a condolence call that the serviceman, quote, must have known what he signed up for, end quote, which was a claim made by a Florida congresswoman who was present for the call. He said, quote, I didn't say what that congresswoman said. I didn't say it at all, and she knows it. Instead, Trump said, he, quote, had a very nice conversation with the woman, with the wife, who sounded like a lovely woman. I did not say what the congresswoman said, and most people aren't too surprised to hear that. This was in response to Representative Frederica Wilson saying last night that she heard the president's comment to Sergeant LaDavid T. Johnson's widow, Maisha, on a speakerphone as they were traveling together in a car to meet his body. She also commented that the president could not remember the soldier's name. Johnson was one of four U.S. service members killed in an ambush by militants in Niger on October 4th. Officials say they were participating in a train and advise mission with local forces.
Yeah, we got some more details on that. And apparently they'd been out on 29 patrols in the prior 6 months, never had any contact with anybody. So nobody was expecting that that day was going to be any different. And according to the Pentagon, the group of people that attacked them was very well-armed and very well-trained. These were,
I imagine so,
ISIS affiliates who had found their way over to Niger. So we've got that investigation going on. Now, interestingly, with regard to this story, we've had the family member of another soldier who spoke to Donald Trump, the father of another soldier who spoke to Donald Trump the same day, come out and say, I thought his call was perfectly respectful. It was good talking to him. He showed genuine compassion. So I don't know who to believe in this whole thing.
But it also stands to reason, first of all, that he was confirmed as saying that no other president had ever reached out to the families of fallen soldiers.
Which is not true.
Which is an absurd statement.
Yeah.
Which I thought was fantastic that many of the families of fallen soldiers that were that their family members died during the Bush or Obama administration came out and told their very real stories about not speakerphone phone calls in a limo, but about them actually coming to their homes, giving them a hug. Even I forget the name, I should look it up, but there was one woman whose husband had died while Bush was in office, and she actually screamed at President George W. Bush. And once she finished screaming, she started crying, and he gave her a hug. And reading that, it just made me very angry that our president is trying to argue that he's the first one to make speakerphone calls.
Yeah, well, here he is stepping on his dick again, which we should be used to by this president from now, by now.
But it's absurd. Like, it's ridiculous that we should have to be used to it. I mean,
but there's
everyone.
There's another dimension to this thing, because there is somebody on the cabinet. I forget which member of the cabinet had a son die, while Obama was president.
That's true. I remember that.
And pointed out that Obama had never called him. And that's where Trump, that's the cover that Trump has to make this outrageous accusation that, well, other president, Obama didn't call anybody. And it's like, no, that's not true either.
He didn't call that one person.
But it's interesting that this whole story comes about because of a Democratic congresswoman from Florida who decides to go to the media and complain about President Trump's phone call. This didn't come from the family. This came from a Democratic congresswoman.
Well, which is what he's attacking. He's saying this is a Dem trying to break me down.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you have to remember that while you and I are clearly totally okay with saying exactly how we feel about the president and anyone else in charge, the majority of Americans don't feel entitled to speak out, to say, I don't think this was, and there was a family member of Sergeant Johnson who said, I feel disrespected. My whole family feels disrespected by the way that we were treated in this.
I am not disagreeing. I'm not disagreeing with the family members. I'm not disagreeing with what was said. I'm less than thrilled with the fact that you have a member of Congress taking this to the media.
Because I agree. It should have been done under through a different avenue.
I'm sure there are a lot of families over the course of the years who did not like the current president, who got that phone call, who felt that they were unfairly treated by that president. We don't know what was said. You know, we've got a general agreement on what's recalled about the conversation, but there's no recordings of it. There's no way to know what the tone of his voice is, or, you know, you take a few things out of context, say anything.
I'm sure there's a really sympathetic way to say he knew what he was getting himself into.
There's some disagreement over whether or not that exact phrase was used, although the people who were in the room with Trump seem to say it was close enough to that.
But, and I agree with you, but my point being that while I don't necessarily agree with the congresswoman's choice to go to the press with this, it's, again, something that perhaps the general public, the people in this man's family, the people in many fallen soldiers' families may not have the courage, feel that they're entitled to come forth and say, and she may have just been taking on the whole reason we elect Congress people is to have them represent us. And maybe she thought she was just taking on the role of her constituents that they didn't have the courage to take on.
You know, in this climate, it's not a completely unfair conclusion that you come to. That's a reasonable explanation for what happened here. But I have to be cynical about this.
Of course you do. Cynical about everything.
I'm not cynical. I'm not cynical about everything.
That was unfair. You're cynical about most things.
Okay, thank you. That's a much more accurate representation. But this is an area that has always been semi-sacred in the United States, in our media, in our popular culture, our discourse. We respect the families of our deceased soldiers, and we don't turn them into political footballs.
Yeah.
Now, whether this congresswoman intended to do that or not, that is precisely what she's done. And anybody who knows Donald Trump, which is everybody in the country at this point, knows that if you come out against this guy, he's going to give it right back to you twice as hard. That's what he does.
But I agree. But perhaps as well, that is the whole point. It's not supposed to be the role of our president to say, oh, you disagree with me? Then screw you. I'm going to blast you on Twitter for 20 hours straight.
And I agree with you on that point. Absolutely. That behavior is unacceptable.
God, I used to follow him on Twitter just for the fact that I like to follow politics and I like to be informed and know what I'm talking about. But I had to stop. I have to look him up every time I hear about some ridiculous Twitter post he's made, because I can't have him in my Twitter feed anymore.
Well,
that's how obnoxious it is.
You don't have to follow him on Twitter. They reprint them on CNN every morning. You know, it's all right there. It's like, here's what Trump said
first
on Twitter.
First president
this morning.
Ever. Yay. I love that he refuses to use the POTUS Twitter. Twitter too. It's like real Donald Trump. That's the one.
I mean, his Twitter antics, and again, he makes these situations worse because a smart president, a Barack Obama, a George Bush.
Oh my God, wait.
Carter, Reagan, Nixon.
Listeners, Derek just called Barack Obama smart.
I never said
this is a moment in history.
I never said the guy wasn't smart. Smart was part of his problem.
Continue. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Just my brain was blown.
Those presidents presented with this kind of commentary would have simply said nothing and would have said, out of respect for the family, we're not going to discuss that.
Exactly.
And you walk away from it and you leave the family to their grieving. Instead, it's Donald Trump. It's like, oh, hey, it's another fight. The guy is walking around looking for fights with everybody.
As I've said so many times, he is a petulant high school girl. Anytime somebody says, oh my God, did you hear this about Trump? He's like, oh my God, well, this about you.
Yeah.
Like, it's always some sort of, he's always knee-jerk reaction, which is not, I don't know about you, but I don't feel that this country needs a knee-jerk reaction president.
It's amusing at times. This isn't one of those times.
Being the operative phrase.
Yeah, this isn't one of those times where it's cute or funny.
This is. Hey, dude. Shh.
Yeah, this is one of those times when it's sad. And the thing that really bothers me about it, and I think that you bother a lot of people about it, is that you have a family that is grieving being dragged into the middle of the media spotlight. They don't need that. They didn't ask for that. I think the Congresswoman is out of line. I think Donald Trump is out of line. Everybody's out of line here. So go back to your corners, get off of Twitter for a few days. Good luck keeping the president off of Twitter. I think he's had a smartphone grafted to his hand so they can't take it away from him.
Seriously.
Because anybody reasonable would have stopped him by this point. In world news, 31-year-old Sebastian Kurz became Europe's youngest leader on Sunday as Austrian voters gave his conservative Austrian People's Party 31.4% of the vote. The move will give Kurz, who was serving as the country's foreign minister, the largest block of seats in parliament but not an outright majority, leading observers to speculate that he will form a coalition government with the right-leaning Freedom Party. The vote marks an abrupt change to nationalist right-wing leadership for Austria, which has been centrist in recent years, and is seen as a rebuke of immigrant-friendly globalist policies championed by France's Emmanuel Macron and Germany's Angela Merkel. Euroskeptic elements exist within the right-wing parties that now make up the majority of Austria's parliament, raising concerns of further strife among the European Union's member nations.
I mean,
no burkas in Austria. That's gone. And if they have their way, no Syrians in Austria. No immigrants of any kind in Austria. These are not...
I was just going to say, he looks like a cross between Donald Trump Jr. and Prince Charles.
He's kind of cute.
I won't lie. He's kind of cute.
He's kind of cute, but...
He's got the ears of a Windsor and the face of a Trump.
Yeah.
And the hair of a Trump. Oh my goodness, does he have the hair of a Trump. Well, I always think it's interesting when any country decides to elect, I love too that he's apparently nicknamed Wundervusi, which translated means someone who can walk on water. I just think it's another Wunderkind.
Mm.
But I always think it's interesting when any country chooses to elect someone on the younger end of when they can be elected, because it can go either way. I mean, you think about JFK was, I believe to this day, our youngest president.
Yes.
And say what you will about him and Marilyn Monroe, but JFK was an excellent president. And part of that was an excellent president if you take his personal life out of it. Let's put it that way.
Well, I never judge presidents by their personal lives. I judge them by what they do in the office.
Well,
JFK got some things right. JFK got some things wrong. On balance, he got more right than wrong.
That's my point, is as with every president, I go through the entire length of American history, you're not going to find any president that didn't do something wrong.
Yeah.
But JFK, for all intents and purposes, the good outweighed the bad. And he was it was America taking a chance on him. And then someone assassinating him. I still don't agree with who we think did. Anyways.
Someday we'll dedicate a show to going into that because it was Oswald.
Watch a couple documentaries and then get back to me.
Yeah, I've seen all the documentaries. It was Oswald, but...
Topic for another time. Or Oswald was framed. Anyways.
Topic for another time.
But neither here nor there. But it's always, I mean, you are always rolling the dice when you elect a younger president. But in this case, any sort of prime minister, whatever the position may be in each country. But I believe this will be very interesting to watch for that exact reason, is you're rolling the dice and you could get a hard eight or you could
get
a snake eyes.
There's kind of an interesting thing going on here where we've still got an old white guy here in the United States who is
still.
Yeah. I don't know if he's a boomer or if he's greatest generation. How old is he? He's a boomer.
A billion? I don't know.
Yeah, no, Trump's a boomer. But Canada, you got Trudeau up there. He's young and handsome and virile.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think Trudeau's another great example. I think Trudeau's doing a great job.
You've got
Again, there's no you're the best, you're the worst when it comes to running a country.
Go ask a dairy farmer how much they like Trudeau, and you'll get a different answer. You got Macron in France,
ask a dairy farmer how much they like Trump.
They love Trump.
That's a fair point. Go ask a smart person how much they like Trump.
You got Macron over in France, who is rapidly losing the support of the people because he hasn't been able to deliver anything that he promised, and the bloom is definitely off the rose. And now we got Kurz over in Austria. And Canada politically tends to be much more European than the United States is. So you can sort of connect all of these things and say, where are all of these young millennials coming from? Like, where are the boomers? There should be baby boomers floating around. Or where are the Gen Xers? There should be Gen Xers floating around in leadership positions. And there just aren't any. Because it's going straight from the boomers to the millennials.
Oh, absolutely.
Partly because...
I think my sister should be president. Megan, if you're listening right now, run for president. You would kill it. She's the most organized person I've ever met.
Partly because these younger candidates come in and they're like, technology, technology, technology. It's the future. And I get the future. And I grew up with the future. And I understand the future. And I know the future. And the voters sit there and they're like, well, you know the future. Bring us the future.
Well, the problem with that, too, is that... That's adorable, but I like to think that and I know you call me a millennial, but I'm really not.
You're a millennial.
No, I'm not. According to the thing I'm looking at right now, I am Generation Y.
You're a self-denying millennial. What? No, you're not Generation Y.
Well, according to what I'm looking at, by the way, Trump's a baby boomer. At the beginning of the baby boomer. Yeah. Anyways, what I think is so unique about when myself, my brother and sister were born and grew up, and what I think is the failure of electing true millennials, which are, in my definition, those who were essentially only aware once the technological boom came in.
Yeah, man buns and smartphones.
Or even just Windows 95, AOL, having that be the first thing you're aware of. Like, I was 11 when Windows 95 and AOL and all of that came out. I am very, very aware of life before that. And I think that what would be really beneficial about electing somebody within that range of, like, born in between 1980 and 1989 is that there's kind of this marriage between the baby boomer generation, obviously way before that, but this generation of people who understand what it was like before technology, and those who also still are very well-read and have worked out how to use technology.
But if you're running a political campaign, you can just skip over that now, and you can sell it as a positive.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is the failure of this, is that it's all well and good to be like, oh, they're so hip, they're so into this and into that. And at the end of the day, you need both sides. You need it to be a two-lane road, not a one-lane road. You need to be able to use technology, but still know how to do things without pressing Control-Alt-Delete.
I don't know that Mr. Kurtz falls into that category. Mr. Kurtz represents a particular strain of Austrian nationalism that gives a lot of people in Europe the yips.
I'm speaking generally. I'm not trying to defend him at all.
But he does represent that strain of Austrian nationalism that gives Europeans the yips. And at the very least, you're going to see some level of protectionism rise up around Austria, less participation in the European Union. And that becomes sort of the big question in all of this, because there are more elections coming up. And the tide is definitely moving away from the Emmanuel Macron, Angela Merkel-backed globalist perspective and back toward populism. I mean, we saw what happened in Spain a couple weeks ago where Catalan voted for independence. Yeah. They're still trying to sort that out. The walls are going up again. And I made this point ahead of the election last year, talking about why Donald Trump had a very good shot of winning the election, even in the midst of scandal after scandal and all the things that were going on.
And grabbed them by the...
And it is because, whether it is intentional, subconscious, or based on a dim, broader view of global politics, at certain points in history, we see particular types of leaders come to prominence. It is not a coincidence that World War II took place with some of the greatest leaders of the 20th century involved in different parts of the world. Whether it's Winston Churchill, Mussolini, Hitler. And by the way, I'm not saying great in terms of, oh, that was a good person who did wonderful things.
No, I agree.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Just in terms of they knew how to, whether for good or bad reasons, they knew how to take command, rule a country, be great orators I understand what you mean.
And part of the reason that you get to that conflict is because you have all of these forceful personalities that can galvanize their people, taking the actions that they think are right. Vladimir Putin is the 200-pound gorilla in the room that is driving everybody else to take a good hard look at
what are we doing?
What kind of leadership do we want to have? Where do we stand in this whole thing? Putin is part of the reason that a Donald Trump gets elected, especially with a very strong Angela Merkel proposing globalism.
Damn you, Putin.
Because on one level, the choice that we had last November was, do we want Hillary Clinton, who is going to hook up with Angela Merkel, and we're going to have 4 more years of globalism all over the place, or do we want Donald Trump, who is probably going to stand up to Putin and say, no, you can't do any more of what you've been doing, and get us out of these sort of global geopolitical entanglements, other than North Korea, which is going to be an ongoing thorn in everybody's side. And the American people said, we want a domestic president. We want somebody who is more focused on what's going on Main Street than in Europe and around the world. But we also want somebody who is going to have a strong military hand. And they saw that in Trump. And a lot of Trump voters are reassured by that. They look at Donald Trump and they see a guy who is not afraid to take command when the use of military force is necessary. And the flip side of that is it scares the living hell out of people who think we're moving headlong into nuclear war.
I'm sorry, folks, if I haven't spoken for a few moments, it's because I've been mimicking, gagging, and throwing up onto my laptop. And no, I do understand that. That's the craziest thing, is that with all of the reading and research I've done, I actually understand why people voted for Donald Trump, looking at it from an incredibly objective level.
It wasn't the Russians, was it?
I still don't. No. And it wasn't even necessarily as I originally thought. It wasn't even necessarily stupidity or naivety or... I understand the concept they are going after, which is the concept that he promised.
And
I'm not condoning the fact that he is our president or condoning the fact that any of you voted for him. But I am understanding the reasoning behind why you did.
He is a ridiculously imperfect avatar of a certain type of leader, but it was the closest thing that we had.
I want to see it's weird. I've actually been comparing it to communism in my, or socialism more appropriately, like Karl Marx in my brain, where excellent in theory, not great in execution.
Yeah. Yeah. If you could just bury your head in the sand for 4 years and be like, okay, employment went up and my taxes didn't go up ridiculously.
No, leave me alone.
We did okay. No, you have to be awake and walking around and seeing all the chaos that goes with this. But Kurt's thing is going to be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what goes on over there. Definitely a lot of right-wing sentiment rising. And hopefully, now that we've got control of Raqqa, the ideal situation is that the Syrians are able to go home and rebuild their country.
I'm knocking on wood right now.
And that sort of takes some of the pressure off of Europe, because that's what's driving a lot of this nationalism right now, is they've got 5 million Syrians walking around with no place to go, who don't necessarily want to be in Europe, but don't want to be back home where they're going to get killed. So if they
Which is fair.
I think if they can go home and not get killed, a lot of them are going to go home.
I would say, if I had the option of wandering around somewhere I didn't really feel like being, but the alternative is going home and being murdered,
yeah,
I'd be where I didn't feel like being.
Al-Assad's still hanging around out there, though, so you never know. In sports news, the Celtics season got off to a horrifying start last night.
Ooh, I saw that.
As Gordon Hayward dislocated his left ankle and fractured his tibia in a hard landing alley-oop fired by Kyrie Irving. Players for both teams turned away and some cried at the sight of the gruesome injury, which could sideline the Celtics' all-star offseason acquisition for the remainder of the season. The Celtics lost the game 102-99 and will be looking for their first win of the season in the home opener tonight.
That was perhaps the most gruesome live image I've ever seen in sports history.
The kid that suffered the compound fracture during the NCAA tournament, I think it was 3 years ago now, that was worse, because the kid's leg just exploded as he landed and like crumpled into a lot of pieces with bones sticking out, and that was nasty.
Okay, well, I'm really glad I didn't see that.
Yeah.
But that looked like a scene, a fabricated scene from Grey's Anatomy,
yeah,
where someone comes in and it's like their foot's turned the wrong way.
Yeah.
That's literally what it looked like. Like upon landing, just.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is coming from someone, I've broken my ankle 3 times in the same place. My orthopedist hates me because it keeps healing properly. The scar tissue breaks again. He's like, well, we're going to put it in a cast and we'll see.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 4 weeks later, he does another x-ray. He's like, damn it, he'll try it again.
Nice. Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
Celtics. That's really a...
Yeah, and...
Both literally and figuratively, a low blow.
Obviously, you know, your heart goes out to Gordon.
Sorry, that was mean.
Your heart goes out to Gordon Hayward and everybody on that team.
Yeah, but particularly to him. Oh, my God, I hope he has some Vicodin or something.
Yeah, he's getting the surgery. So maybe we'll see him before the end of the season. We wish him a speedy recovery.
Absolutely.
And please, no more of that. This, like, football, I'm geared up for it, you know? Like, yeah.
Well, but that's the thing. Basketball, you don't expect, I mean, you expect, like, minor, maybe, like, pull it, hurt one of your ligaments or tendons. You don't think horror movie style.
Yeah. And that's a tough blow for this team, because, I mean, they completely rebuilt the Celtics from the ground up this off season. Kyrie Irving was, you know, one of the marquee gets.
Oh, yeah.
But Hayward was right up there, too. And we're trying to build a team that can beat the Cavaliers. And we almost did last night. So that's one good takeaway from this, is even after everything that happened, you're on the road, you're in Cleveland, everyone is booing Kyrie Irving every second that he's on the court. We still only lost the game by 3 points.
Well, and that's it is a true testament, first of all, that that's the case. But also, you look at I must say, even though I'm not at all of our usual listeners know, I'm primarily a baseball fan. With that being said, yay, Astros, boo, Yankees. But unfortunately, the Yankees are. I don't want to get into that right now, but.
Like, you don't like Aaron Judge.
But I still obviously support all Boston sports teams. And it really just broke my heart seeing the look on his face. It was both of pain of his ankle being severely broken and pain of him knowing the impact of that for everything else. Like, you could see that was a face of both literal pain and just the pain of disappointment and being like, this season is over for me, or at least this season is greatly impaired.
When you see grown men immediately drop to their knees and start praying and other grown men crying, you know something bad is happening out there. Yeah. Yeah. So,
well,
go Celts.
Go Celts. So in entertainment news, yesterday, Google honored Mexican-American music icon Selena on the anniversary of her first studio album release with a new doodle. Google's homepage featured artwork depicting the late entertainer and a giant play button that, when pressed, presented an animated look at the life and times of Selena. Selena was notably awarded the Tejano Music Award for Female Vocalist of the Year in 1986 and then released her first self-titled album, Selena, in 1989, which consistently straddled the top of the Billboard charts before winning a Grammy for Best Mexican-American Album in 1993, the first female and youngest Tejano artist to do so. Selena was tragically shot to death by the president of her fan club, Yolanda Saldivar, in 1995. I had to include this story, first of all, because the main topic of our show tonight is the biggest entertainment story from last week, but also because anyone born within the range of when I was born loved Selena. Like, I loved Selena so much.
I somehow missed the whole Selena thing.
How did you miss Selena?
Because grunge was happening.
Oh, that's fair.
But
that's the thing, is you're a dude. It was like really big. It was a really big deal. Well, first of all, too, like, it was a big deal for any girl who felt, for lack of, and obviously I'm Irish, I'm not in any way Mexican or Latina, but she was a big deal for anybody who felt kind of a little bit like a minority, because, you know, we were all of the artists of like the late 80s, early 90s that were female were very hot, super white, usually very Anglo. And I liked particularly seeing somebody who was kind of off of the mainstream being so successful. And also the movie Selena came out maybe a year or two after she passed. That was also a huge influence. But I remember I graduated from fifth grade, I believe, in 1997. And for our like end of school year talent show, it was like four people singing Selena songs.
Nice.
And of course, I can't. I'm trying to think of the big one.
See, at the time that she was popular, I was freshly out of college, old enough to drink in bars, and the grunge thing was happening, and the industrial thing was happening, and whatever was happening in pop music at that point in time wasn't cool if you were over the age of 21. That was teeny bopper music.
I always forget you're old.
That was teeny bopper music, and we were like, give me more Ministry, give me more Pearl Jam, give me more Nirvana.
Which, ironically, like, you have to remember, too, that I was not allowed to watch. I was raised in a very good Catholic household, and I was not allowed. And I wasn't allowed to watch MTV, so all of my access to music before the age of whatever age I started sneaking MTV was... you've got to know the song, Derek. Late at night when all the world
is
sleeping.
Yeah, yes, I know the song.
Yeah, oh, like that.
I'm just saying that this was at the time when Kurt Cobain was still alive.
That's fair.
And Joey Ramone was still alive.
Well, technically.
And putting out new music. And REM was still making good albums.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that's what's weird is that my sister is like I said, like 5 years older than me. She had no interest in Selena whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like,
why aren't you listening to Bush?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's it. It was like, you know, hey, did you notice we have 9-inch nails now?
I wasn't cool enough.
Have you listened to this?
Well, that's the thing. Selena was perfect for anyone who, like, anyone who wasn't of the age to actually enjoy, which all of that music I love now. Obviously, like, I have, you want to go check my iTunes, I have all of the things you just named on my iTunes now. But at the time, when you're like 9, 10, 11, you're just like becoming sort of a woman. Yeah. It was the perfect music for exactly that.
Yeah.
And that's why I felt it was worth mentioning, because I did love her. Not to mention, it is what got Jennifer Lopez her first big break.
Other
than being a dancer on In Living Color.
Unless you were dating somebody, you weren't listening to, if you were a guy in the early 1990s, if you were an adult, you know, bar legal age drinking adult in his early 20s, unless you were dating somebody, you weren't listening to anything that had melody. Melody was out. Melody was not cool. We wanted grinding, screaming noise.
Hey, and I got a new complaint.
Yes, great song. Awesome song.
Yeah, I actually agree with
that. And people yelling at us about how dismal and awful life was. Because we'd graduated into this recession. None of us had jobs. We were all living 5 and 6 to an apartment and still sponging off of our parents.
Oh, come on. You want to talk about graduating into a depression?
Nobody's dating anybody.
I graduated college in 2008. We could do a whole show about this.
Yeah, no. You got... Day,
I win.
Comparatively, yeah, you win that one, because ultimately we did find jobs. But, you know, it's just in the early 90s, there wasn't that same level of crossover of pop music.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I was going to say, it was I agree. The mid-90s is when it suddenly became, it was like Kurt Cobain died. And then suddenly it was like, okay, we need to be happy again for a little while.
Yeah. Well, it was like Kurt Cobain died and suddenly like the music industry had nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and also, you know, Bill Clinton was all like playing the saxophone on MTV.
Yeah.
And that kind of messed with everything.
That's so. Right around the time that things like the Macarena are happening.
Yes, precisely.
And Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba.
Yes. And If You Steal My Sunshine.
Yes. Len. Yeah. Like brainless dance music suddenly comes back in and becomes big again. And everybody's like, yeah, that's what we got.
Ah, middle school.
Yeah.
Or for you, you know, your mid to late 20s.
In technology news, every Wi-Fi network on the planet is vulnerable to hackers.
Fun.
Let me rephrase that or restate that. Every Wi-Fi network on the planet is vulnerable to hackers, according to two Belgian researchers. A new vulnerability that the researchers dubbed CRAC, short for Key Reinstallation Attack, could allow hackers to intercept information traveling between wireless devices, such as laptops and smartphones, and wireless routers. The vulnerability was discovered in the WPA2 protocol that has been the standard for consumer wireless security for more than a decade, but no known attacks using the method have been reported so far. Patches that will remove the vulnerability are expected in the near future. So your home wireless network, find out your router, find out what kind of router you've got. Keep an eye out for the patch. Nobody's like, and especially if you live in a densely populated area, like out where I am, out in the suburbs, unless somebody really wants to attack my system, number one, it's going to be obvious that you're in the neighborhood doing this. And number two, you're probably not going to bother. Because I'm out in the woods. I'm nowhere. But if you live in an area like Somerville, where there are 300 routers in a 500-foot
radius. I was going to say, where there are...
radius.
Yeah, 300 routers in a block, perhaps.
This is the kind of thing that you want to be on top of. This is the kind of thing that you want to be aware of. Because, yeah, it's worth somebody's while to go in there and try and steal as much information as they can. Now, again, there have been no attacks reported yet. But the vulnerability exists, and as soon as you tell people that the vulnerability exists, there are rooms full of people sitting around trying to figure out how to take advantage of it. So protect yourself. Keep a close eye out for updates on this. Find out what kind of a router you have. If it is supplied by your cable company, find out what it is. Start calling your cable company and saying, where is my security update? I want my security update. Please send my security update.
My mom also lives in the woods, so Mo, I know you usually listen. You are cool.
Yeah.
We're set.
Yeah, if you're way, way out in the middle of nowhere, you're not...
There are rabbits and turkeys there. Yeah. Like, that is the... it's not like, you know, Leominster, middle of nowhere. But because it's pretty middle of nowhere.
My understanding of the way that this thing works is a hacker does need to be somewhere in the vicinity of the device to upload the software to gain access to it. Once they gain access to it, anything that you send back and forth on wireless devices, your passwords, text messages, emails, financial information, all of that can be intercepted anywhere in the world. But they have to have some proximity to the device to set it up.
Honestly, I've been watching... Have you been watching the show on Netflix, Manhunt, the Unabomber?
Oh, yeah. I saw it when it ran on History Channel the first time around. It's got Paul Bettany in it. He's awesome.
I'm going to say, it's dope.
I still cannot forgive him for stealing the love of my life, Jennifer Connelly, but he's a good actor.
Oh, you poor little boo.
Yeah.
And you had such a chance with her, too.
I adore Jennifer. If Paul's ever mean to
she
you,
she rocks those eyebrows. She made me regret plucking my eyebrows so hard when it was cool in the 90s. But no, things like this are what, watching it, obviously, I don't support somebody bombing things to make a point, but they reference his manifesto and like his ideology.
You should read his manifesto at some point, by the way, if you haven't.
I started reading it and I was like, I shouldn't read this because I'm going to agree with him.
Oh, you are. You are. That's one of the great realities of it, is he had a lot of very good things to say in the manifesto.
Well, he was a genius.
Yeah.
Just a genius that happened to bomb... kill a bunch of people.
Yeah, sociopathic murderer, but also like had a pretty interesting approach to life.
Well, and it's things like this happening that make me not think, again, people who are about to call in and scream at me, I'm not saying he was right to bomb anyone.
No.
But his ideas in the manifesto and in general, aside from the let's make a point by bombing people, it's things like this that make me think he was correct, which is that like as much as... this technology that we're using was already there, so we're cool. But in a lot, while the internet and all of that is useful in a lot of ways, it's things like this that it's like, and what we were talking about a few weeks ago with the breach of our credit information, there's so many things that have, and drones, and there's so many things that have gotten worse as a result of technology.
Well, no matter what we do, every time we invent some new technology or come up with some new way of doing things, there is that segment of society that sits there and tries to figure out how to do illegal things with it.
Yeah.
It's that simple. You've got hospitals, people are going to show up and try and steal medicine. You've got shopping malls, people are going to con people in the parking lot, they're going to shoplift. Every time we do something, criminals follow.
Well,
and the internet offers so many new...
so many avenues.
...and creative ways to steal from people that we're really just scratching the surface of the full realm of criminal possibility that exists. In fact, you could say a lot of hackers are just non-creative because they're doing the same things that other hackers have done in the past. Like, come up with something new. Dazzle me, boys.
Yeah. Make a hand reach out of the screen and strangle me.
Yeah.
Then I'll be impressed.
But this particular announcement...
don't actually do that. That's terrifying.
This particular announcement has to do with the new approach that's being taken, where you have groups of researchers who are looking at all of these devices that basically form the backbone of our society.
Mm-hmm.
Routers, access points, PCs, software, smartphones, and trying to figure out before the hackers do where the vulnerabilities are. So these researchers look at it and say, how can I break into this and create problems or steal information? And that's where you get this. This is a vulnerability that's existed for 10 years. These guys just figured out how to do it.
Well, and it's something, to be perfectly frank, that you don't have to be... I find that the most, one of the more terrifying things about it is that you don't have to be super intelligent to figure this out because it's made with such a framework that it's vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, 30, 40 years ago, trying to hack into a computer, trying to program was, I mean, I remember in high school, so that would have been, Jesus, that was almost 20 years ago, 15 years ago. Anyways, when I was in high school, I took a computer programming class, and it was all very intricate. It was all these things that I would never have been able to figure out on myself by myself. And then in college, I'm watching my other friends who are taking these computer programming classes, and I'm helping them with their homework, being like, the language is so much easier now. It used to be a mathematics class, and now it feels like doing a 12 and up puzzle.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, to do it really properly, you have to be very computatively.
Well, you've got to be precise. You've got to get your syntax.
You have to be precise. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. You have to be able to do syntax properly, but at the same time, it's not that difficult. It's not something you have to have gone to MIT to figure out.
And the other thing that we have,
by the way, this isn't me incriminating myself. Do math by calculating tips.
The other thing is, 30 years ago, we didn't have all of this information connected to the internet.
Yes, and that's the other thing, is that anyone can do the research anytime.
As we move,
I figured out what the pounds per square inch of my tires were supposed to be earlier today by pounding it into the internet and saying 2011 Toyota Corolla.
As we move further into cloud computing and centralized data storage, what we're actually doing is creating a big, fat, juicy target for everybody who wants to steal data.
Why do you think I saved nothing to the cloud and all of it to my private zip drive?
But even if you do that, everybody that you work with, you know, your banks and your insurance companies and all the rest of that, they're throwing all of their stuff up on the cloud because nobody wants to have a room full of servers anymore. But the reality is, when you had the room full of servers, you had a much greater control over your security and who could access things.
Well, then I hope hackers really enjoy the $32 that are in my checking account right now. Have fun buying two packs of cigarettes and a pack of gum, fools.
No, they're going to spend it on scratchies and triple their winnings.
Oh, you got to pay cash for those.
No, why? There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Very little, let's say no stormy weather in the forecast for a change. Temperatures in the mid-50s tonight. It'll be a little crisp out there. Not quite as cold as it has been. And it's pretty much going to stay that way for the next few days. Tomorrow, look for sunny skies, highs in the low 70s, lows in the mid-50s. Friday, a little bit cooler, highs in the mid-60s, lows around 50, sunny skies. Saturday, sunny skies, highs in the low 70s, lows in the mid-50s. Sunday, partly cloudy skies, but no real rain associated with that. Beautiful autumn day, high in the low 70s, lows in the mid-50s on Sunday night. And on Monday, partly cloudy skies, highs in the mid-70s, lows around 60 on Monday with slightly higher humidity.
I love this weather. I missed it.
Another little blast to the heat and humidity coming in here for early next week. But
this, like, currently, it's the what I like to define as crispy.
Yeah.
Crispy.
Yeah, it's not going to be quite as crispy over the weekend, so it'd be a good time to get out there and do the yard work. It should be a beautiful night if you're going to see the New England Patriots take on the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday night. I will be down there, so I'm looking forward to that. And a great weekend for the yard work. Go clean up them leaves. It's that time of year. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. When we come back, did you hear all the other stories that caught our attention here on WMFO Medford?
This is Sarah Beck for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Slow cooking, whether on your stovetop or in a slow cooker, can make the economical cuts of meat taste delicious. Less tender cuts like bottom round and brisket taste best if cooked in moist heat, so they're ideal for slow cooking. Since these cuts usually give you the most meat for your money, you can have economy and good taste. For more information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, 20250.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like Mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
91.5 FM WMFO. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. If you kids like numbers a little better than letters, that can be 9636 at the end of that. And right now is one of our favorite parts of the program, which is called Did You Hear?, where we quiz each other on the various things that have happened on the last week and try to make each other look stupid if the other doesn't know the answer. And to start off, I am going to say Taco Bell Uber.
Taco Bell Uber.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I know that Ford's doing the thing where you can you can get Taco Bell delivered by the via the Uber, like, Great Eats program. Is that what it's called?
It's called E24, and no, that's not what I'm talking about.
And then I don't know.
A Southern California Uber rider who pummeled a driver in an attack caught on camera over the weekend in Newport Beach, California, has been identified as one of the corporate executives at Taco Bell.
Nice.
And was fired from his post.
Oh, come on.
Costa Mesa police arrested Benjamin Golden, 32, on assault charges and public intoxication in connection with the attack. Golden was Taco Bell's mobile experience and innovation lead. And worked for Yum Brands for 7 years.
You know, times were you could throw a chalupa at somebody and not worry about losing your job. I miss those days.
Well, it's, what I find so funny about this is that Taco Bell released a statement saying that was very unbecoming of a Taco Bell employee. And I was like, dude, I've been to Taco Bell. I was like pretty par on for Taco Bell.
I've had food thrown at me by a Taco Bell employee.
Just like, maybe there's cum in it, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, I know I read something about him, and now I don't.
You just don't follow the footballs.
Yeah, I really don't care that much, unless they have cute butts.
Yeah, Colin Kaepernick's not a bad-looking guy.
He's not Rob Gronkowski, though.
No, he's not. Well, he has hired Attorney to the Stars Mark Garagos, and is suing the NFL for collusion, alleging that all 32 owners have conspired to keep him from playing football. This is a case. This is a case he is not going to win. And
I can't imagine he will.
Because here's the thing: if you want to prove collusion against the NFL, you better have some kind of a document that says, signed by all 32 owners, or by 31 owners to another owner saying, don't hire this guy. Because that's the only way you're going to get it done. There are football reasons why Colin Kaepernick is not playing football right now. And every time somebody gets hurt, every time a quarterback goes down, it was Aaron Rodgers over the weekend, everybody starts saying, well, where's Colin Kaepernick? Why don't you hire Colin Kaepernick? Well, Green Bay's coach had the perfect answer to that when that came up in a press conference on Monday, because he said, I have invested 3 years in Brett Huntley, and I've invested 2 years in our other backup quarterback. I'm not going to bring somebody off the street.
Yeah.
Quarterback, you don't just plug somebody in the middle of the season and expect that they're going to be able to play. The backup quarterbacks who are there have been on the practice squad every week. They get reps with the starting players every single week. They've been watching the film every single week. They've been studying the playbook every single week. Backup quarterbacks exist so that if your starting quarterback gets hurt or isn't a promising rookie like Deshaun Watson or maybe Mitchell Trubisky, they can step in and play the game.
This just, like, this whole thing, again, as you know, I don't really follow football that much, short of go Pats, and I'm going to marry.